ready to start paper 17. Pretty obvious why this block of papers is the Supreme Spirits. So here they're actually going to give us the full overview of the seven Supreme Spirit groups. And it's on old single column, page 197. Let's see, what do we want to say up front? Probably just, as you glance down at the page, you can see, like I mentioned when we started reading paper 16, that the first beings in the list of the Supreme Spirits are the seven master spirits. So we've already had, a full-on treatment of the seven master spirits. And then we're going to get little vignettes on the others. Obviously, as you scan down, there's the Creative Mother Spirits. Obviously, there's other places in the book that have, more extensive description of the Creative Mother Spirits, things about the Adjutant Mind Spirits, etc. But this is the paper where they're trying to help you appreciate a little bit the connectivity between this vast range of spirit phenomena with the master spirits on one end, all the way down to, a non-personal, fact of the adjutants. Okay, so that whole broad ministry, what does it have in common? And, the title is telling you something. There's a supremacy in play, and by and large, how you can understand that, the adjutant mind spirits, like insects, have the first adjutant. Doesn't that seem a little out of place here, with the master spirits, like we were talking about? They're pretty high facts, okay? Well, even though that first adjutant is reaching down to very, very low depths, that it's just that, how it got to be so low. It wasn't made low and just lies there low. It came down from above. So no matter how lowly the ministry might go, it has roots in supremacy. Okay, so even in the little details of every little insect, that's all rooted back on high in the whole, in the individuality of the whole. The big picture is always playing out in those tiny details. And that's why occasionally tiny details coincidentally seem to conspire together. Because it's not as it first appears. Something that's just down there with no connection to anything profound. Everything comes top down into existence. So that's, you'll see just as soon as we start reading, that's being hinted at. And again, remember how far we are away. We're on paper 17, and what's the paper up in the Supreme Papers where you have that section 6, that's, really finally brings in God the Mother? That's paper 117, okay? 100 papers away yet, So, they're a long ways away from talking directly, but all of the clues, you'll see are right there immediately in the first paragraph. Okay, so let's read a little bit.
Paper 17, the seven Supreme Spirit Groups. The seven Supreme Spirit Groups are the universal coordinating directors of the seven segmented administration of the grand universe. Although all are classed among the functional family of the infinite spirit, the following three groups are usually classified as children of the Paradise Trinity. 1. The seven master spirits. 2. The seven supreme executives. 3. The reflective spirits.
Okay, so let's just start with that first. So like I said, let's see what they're putting in that first little bit of text before the list of the three. There's two things in there that are giving you hints of the mother. Can you even point out what they are?
Coordinating,
yep. And what's the other thing? The Trinity. Yeah, the Paradise Trinity. Right, exactly. Right, see, so, so the seven Supreme Spirit groups are the universal coordinating directors. Okay, so even though you go, well, no, wait a minute, we just read a whole bunch about the seven master spirits, and we learned that they're the primary expressions of the infinite spirit. They were created by the infinite spirit. What do they mean? Usually classified as children of the Paradise Trinity. How do I understand this? There's a reason why when I talk about the spirit presence of a particular master spirit, I call that a spiritual womb. Even though, they're not the seven master mother spirits or something like that. They aren't directly, but they're very, very intimately involved in what they're just alluding to here. This coordinating phenomenon. And an easy way to appreciate just how intimate they are in this, with a creative mother spirit, that local universe womb, it's this twofold presence. She's the mind womb and the spiritual womb of the local universe. And technically, she's the spirit-mind womb. The two are together. You go up a notch to the super universe, and it's not hyphenated together. It's not a conjoint presence, a conjoint womb like that. It's separated, but obviously has to still be very intimate. The mindal womb of the reflective mother spirits, on the one hand, the spiritual womb of the master spirit, on the other hand, and those two are, working totally hand in hand. If anything, you can directly appreciate how the master spirits might be very, so close to a relationship with the Paradise Trinity that they would say this, children of the Paradise Trinity, because who is involved in bringing those reflective mother spirits into existence, the master spirits? But the Paradise Trinity is also involved. And I alluded to the bigger fact in play here back when we were reading some of the complicated details in the previous paper. There's a very, very ever-present, very close association between the infinite spirit and the Paradise Trinity in their manifestation. Okay? So, you always, even if you don't initially appreciate the details, just kind of keep that in mind, that when they told you that the infinite spirit is really, responsible for bringing the master spirits into existence, you'd say, yes, but I know there's this very tight tie between the infinite spirit and the Paradise Trinity. And that probably has ramifications. And the ramifications are you really have kind of a system of beings that come into existence all at the same time out of this relationship between the Paradise Trinity and the infinite spirit. And the master spirits are part of that system. So you have this this system that has inherently coordinate action in it, because the Paradise Trinity, is generating that system. This, responsible for it being a universal coordinating directors. Even if the person, the individual who's taking the lead was the infinite spirit rather than the Paradise Trinity, it's in this very tight coupling between the two. So coordination from the Paradise Trinity is very much in play. And sometimes that manifests very literally as mother deity, like reflective mother spirits or creative mother spirits. Other times it's sort of, you know, hidden behind what you immediately see in the case of the seven master spirits, for instance. Okay, so that's the deal. And, you know, it's just, it's a pretty, you know, it really catches you off guard to see him, you know, usually classified as children of the Paradise Trinity, to see that. And, I mean, there's nothing that they've said sort of directly that would allow you to understand why they're saying that. You know, and you can go to paper 30 with a, you know, where they're talking about these classifications and stuff. It's like, well, I don't see them, you know, listed like that. What's going on here? See, it's one of those hints they're dropping that, you know, you ought to be, you know, searching the whole book and trying to find the greater understanding would finally allow you to understand why in the world they're saying that.
Why do you say the infinite spirit and the Paradise Trinity when the infinite spirit's part of the Paradise Trinity?
No. See, and again, that's the thing. We're not talking, the Paradise Trinity is a fourth fact. You have the three, you know, deities that can function separately or in pairs or to, to all three of them. If all three of them are functioning together in an association, that's called the first triunity. What Christendom and stuff calls the Trinity. I mean, it's not. The Trinity is a separate fact. It's an organic fourth fact. It does things all by itself. I don't have anything directly to do with the three persons. Like, it makes an Ancient of Days. The Father, the Son, and the Spirit aren't involved in that act. You know, at least, you know, bringing the self into existence. The Paradise Trinity, you know, is a separate generating phenomenon. It's the other half of the original. You know, in and of itself, it's an originating phenomenon. The Father is the other side of that originating phenomenon. You know, and we understand the Son and the Spirit as sort of immediately being consequences of the Father's originating nature. But there's a flip side of originating, and that's the Paradise Trinity by itself, as itself. And then, like I'm trying to point out, sometimes, you know, you have Father, Son, Spirit. Sometimes that third fact, you know, which if you, you know, let's think in kind of the elliptical fashion. If I'm coming off one side from the Father and I get to the Spirit as an extremity, and the Trinity's on the other side, see, those are the two that are the closest around the ellipse. What I'm pointing out is going on here is that connection between the third source and center, not as the conjoined actor, not as the person, but as the non-personal fact, the infinite spirit, that non-personal side or aspect of the third source and center has this very intimate relationship with this non-personal fact called the Paradise Trinity. Those two non-personal things are coupled in a very intimate way. So that when there's creating wanting to happen from the third source and center side, there's going to be trinitizing coupled with that coming from the Paradise Trinity aspect of that close association. And so that's one of the things we're going to see as we go forward here. We're going to have to start wrestling a little bit with trinitizing, okay, being an originating mechanism. You know, in contrast to creating, being an originating mechanism. Yeah. And trinitizing and creating are different. Both are originating something. You know, they're bringing something into existence that wasn't there before. You know, in what we've historically thought of as godlike fashion. But see, God's create, the Paradise Trinity trinitizes. It's not personalized deity. It's not God. But it can bring things into existence just like creation, only it's called trinitizing. You know, they've coined that word to reveal that there's this other method of bringing things into existence. And You know, we'll talk about it as we get in. We all know that as finaliters, there's a possibility that two of us, you know, way in the remote future, might be able to get together in a very close coordination, synchronization, and bring a being into existence, a creature trinitized son. We're not creating. We're never going to be creators. But we can, this originating can flow through that pair of finaliters and bring a creature trinitized son into existence. You know, we will trinitize them into existence, not create them into existence.
I still don't understand the answer to Joan's question.
Me either.
What's the question?
Well, the paradise. How does the paradise trinity and the infinite spirit, so it's the universe, Father, the eternal Son, and the infinite spirit, is the paradise trinity?
No. I have four fingers. Is my pinky my index finger? No, they're separate fingers. This is the Father, this is the Son, this is the Spirit, and this is the Paradise Trinity. They're four different fingers. Okay? I mean, if I have four people sitting in the room here, I can't say, well, Joan doesn't really exist as a fourth fact. She's just the shadow cast by these three. No, Joan is a fourth fact. She's a separate individual. The Paradise Trinity is a separate individual. You can have a conversation with the Paradise Trinity. It's an entity, you know, if you will.
You can have a conversation with the Universal
Father. Right, yeah. But you can't have a conversation. You can't have a conversation with the association of the three. You can't have a conversation with the. You can't have a conversation with the first triunity, but you can have a conversation with the Paradise Trinity. Okay, in the same way, you can have a conversation with an adjuster. Okay, a fragment of deity. You can have a conversation with the adjuster. It's not a person, but you can have a conversation with it. Okay, the Paradise Trinity is not a person. It's deity. It's innately minded. Deity, all deity is innately minded. You can have a conversation with the Paradise Trinity. The first triunity is not deity or anything. It's not a literal fact. It's the association of three persons working together. Okay, it's not something that you can shake hands with. Okay, it's a concept of them working together.
Trinity origin creation isn't creation like creators create. It's a different
age. Right, it's trinitization. That's the word. They just coined the word. It's called trinitization. That's just what that word means. Yeah, that's just what that word means. Yeah.
Now, the flip side of Trinity is the Father.
Well, not really, not technically. Remember, the thing that you don't know originally when you're reading this is there's a thing called the original, okay? There's a thing called the universal one of infinity. That's the original, okay? And the original has, the universal one of infinity has two sides, okay? It's a literal facet of deity, but it has two sides. One side is called the Paradise Trinity, and the other side is not called the Father. It's just the root of the Father. It's called the first center. And there's a whole bunch more of the Father than that. There's the first source, the universal Father, you know, universal creator, universal controller, infinite upholder. All that stuff is Father too. But it's not part of the universal one of infinity. The universal one of infinity just has two components. The Paradise Trinity on one side and the first center on the other side. Yeah, but that's not part of the universal one of infinity. Yeah, just that. Paradise Trinity.
See, the problem is that we've always been taught, at least I've always understood, that the Trinity was made up of the Father, Son, and the Spirit. So to try to differentiate them from the Trinity is just a mind whacker.
Right. I mean, it's the oldest conundrum in the Christian book.
Yeah.
Okay. Trying to grok the Paradise Trinity, or grok the Trinity, the Trinity of Christendom. You have to somehow challenge what you learned in Sunday school, okay, all those years ago. There is no Trinity like that. the thing that's called the Trinity is not the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. Okay? Even if you give them fancier names like Eternal Son and Infinite Spirit. Okay? That's not the Paradise Trinity. Okay? It's you know, a completely never imagined fact. It's a pure revelatory aspect. The Paradise Trinity is a fourth entity. And it's an entity that can't be personalized, so it can't be made a being. The other three entities can be personalized, and they have been. And they're beings called the Universal Father, the Eternal Son, and I'm the conjoint actor. But even that one, see, I had to switch it, because technically, when we talk about the third source and center putting a creator personal face forward, we call that the conjoint actor. But it has another face that's not personal. You know, and it's a source. The infinite spirit is the source of a creative spirit, for instance. Not a creative mother spirit, but just a creative spirit. That creative spirit doesn't manifest as a person any more than its source does. The infinite spirit doesn't manifest as a person. It's the non-personal functioning of the third source and center. It doesn't have a personal character. And you go, well, how could something that, you know, that profound, I know the way they talk about it. Well, yeah, like an adjuster. How profoundly do they talk about an adjuster? It's not a person. What that should be trying to challenge you is, wow, the word person or personality in the Urantia book means something I've never imagined. It's something 100 million light years beyond anything any human has ever imagined. That's personality. It's something very transcendent. You know, there isn't anything that any human has ever thought that would lead them to suspect if they interacted with an adjuster that it wasn't a person. I mean, they would think it was the most profound person they'd ever met. In other words, everything you've been calling personal isn't. Okay? It's just mindal. It's a self. A self has, you know, behaviors. It even has, you know, an ability to assert itself. You know, and you'll misinterpret that. You'll call that will when that self asserts itself. But it's not will. The adjuster, you know, if it very aggressively does something, you go, wow, it has a really strong will. No, it doesn't. It has no will at all. The adjuster doesn't have will. It's not a person.
What was the way of communicating the Father's will?
Well, it's part of the Father's personal ministry, but it doesn't have its own will that it could consecrate to the will of the Father, say. It's not willed.
The thought adjuster would be like a source, and that's what he is. So we're gaining from that source, but he hasn't been personalized, he's not a person, but it's like something we can draw from, just like we would do the first source and center. Can you think of it that way?
Sure. I mean, it's a source of a number of things. It's a source of adjusting, for instance, within your mind. Hence, it's called the thought adjuster. You know, just try to appreciate that not only is that adjuster not a person, and yet it's minded, it thinks, it makes decisions. Okay, you know, it decides to do things with you and stuff. But none of that is will. It's not using will to do that. It's just using mind. It's making decisions. It's not making choices. It can't make choices. It can only make decisions. Okay,
you know. Because the chooser commands it.
Right. My choice can dictate its decisions. Okay, we don't get too far afield there. But, you know, that fact, and knowing that an adjuster with that minded behavior, what it is a fragment of deity. It's like, well, let's go back and let's just think about deity. Forget about fragments of deity. I mean, if a fragment of deity is minded, deity must be minded. And it is. They tell you in the book, deity is innately minded. So when you're talking about a facet of deity, like the Paradise Trinity, or this expression of deity, That's a minded phenomenon. You know, and it does everything that a mind can do. And of course, it's a very high mind. It does things that we can't even imagine that minds can do. It's way above our mind pay grade. Okay, it's a very high-minded fact. It can communicate in profound ways. It can make all kinds of profound decisions. You know, and in the case of the Paradise Trinity, it's at the root of everything. It's making really big decisions. You know, it has totality attitude, you know, is one of its attributes. So every time it makes a decision, it involves everything. Every decision that the Paradise makes involves everything. Okay? That's how high-minded it is.
Yeah. You said Paradise.
What did I say?
Paradise.
Oh, the Paradise Trinity, yeah.
I want to know from the fourth functional level of total deity, the creative aspect, self-distributive and divinely revealed deity. Where does the Paradise Trinity fit in there?
Well,
you can just say yes or no.
No, I mean, okay. See, you can't see it just in that simple chart. Okay, I mean, you got it. That's why I made the ellipse. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Because it's important to understand that every single level,
right,
in that list right there at the beginning of the foreword,
page,
you know, every one of those levels has Trinity functioning in it. Okay. The Trinity is in every one of those levels. Mm-hmm. Okay,
and that's
what
necessarily the second half.
That's what this circuit is about: the functioning of the Paradise Trinity. So you are asking, does this level, the creative level, have the functioning of the Trinity? Yeah, right here. The Trinity of absoluteness functions on that level.
So you're advising I just start looking more towards the ellipse, if an internal ellipse.
See, when you have that, you know those 14 things are spread out over those seven levels. And then later in the book, when it says the Trinity functions on every level, you know you can add something to that. You can put a third thing on every line. Functioning of the Trinity, functioning of the Trinity, functioning of the Trinity, functioning, you know. And then you can get more specific. It's like, well, I know the Trinity functions in three different ways: the Trinity of absoluteness, the Trinity of ultimacy, and the Trinity of supremacy. Which way is it engaging each of those levels? And that's what I've listed on here. Okay? The Trinity can't go on one level because one of its fundamental functionings is totality attitude. If it was only in one level, it wouldn't be doing totality attitude.
I can see how it could be on all the levels, but maybe the second part of all the levels. But you're saying no, it's an actual third part.
Right, it's a third thing in every level.
On this eternal ellipse of total deity.
Yeah.
Because he's a fragment of God, thought of Jester. Why isn't he on here?
Well, technically, a thought of Jester is there. Well, if a thought of Jester is a fragment of which type of deity?
Father.
No. Well. Yes, but specifically, what aspect of the Father? Which deity facet of the Father? There's six different facets of the Father. Which one is it?
Lastly,
the infinite upholder. That part of the Father is fragmented as an adjuster, the infinite upholder. So yes, it is on there. The infinite upholder is on there.
That's also where he and the mother overlap.
Remember, that's... What's the title of that chart?
The infinite of total deity.
Okay, not of fragments and beings and, you know. I mean, you know, it's just about deity. That chart is about deity, not about beings. The supreme being's not on there. You know, all kinds of beings aren't on there. Architects of the master universe aren't on there. Fragments aren't on there. I mean, that's a chart of deity. Okay. All right. Wow. So it took a long time to point out coordinating in Trinity. Okay. I mean, but you know, remember the fact that was so complicated just to read the first couple lines of this. There's hundreds of pages like this. I mean, this is way beyond grade school, you know, or Sunday school. I mean, the Urantia book blows everything out of water. You have to completely change every thought you've ever had to even begin to understand the first sentence, okay, of any of these papers. Okay. Okay. So if it isn't obvious already, I'll say it. Put your thinking cap on here. Now, we've just barely scratched the surface here. Wait till we start reading something.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So what about the other four in this list of seven?
The remaining four groups are brought into being by the creative acts of the Infinite Spirit or by his associates of creative status. 4, the reflective image aids. 5, the seven spirits of the circuits. 6, the local universe creative spirits. 7, the adjutant mind spirits. These seven orders are known on Universa as the seven supreme spirit groups. Their functional domain extends from the personal presence of the seven master spirits on the periphery of the Eternal Isle through the seven paradise satellites of the spirit, the Havona circuits, the governments of the super universes, and the administration and supervision of the local universes, even to the lowly service of the adjutants bestowed upon the realms of evolutionary time on the worlds of time and space.
So it goes everywhere from the periphery of paradise to a single-celled animal and everything in between. Okay. Very vertical, this list of seven.
The seven master spirits are the coordinating directors of this far-flung administrative realm. In some matters pertaining to the administrative regulation of organized physical power, mind energy, and impersonal spirit ministry, they act personally and directly. And in others, they function through their multifarious associates. In all matters of an executive nature, rulings, regulations, adjustments, and administrative decisions, the master spirits act in the persons of the seven supreme executives. In the central universe, the master spirits may function through the seven spirits of the Havona circuits. On the headquarters of the seven super universes, they reveal themselves through the channel of the reflective spirits and act through the persons of the Ancients of Days, with whom they are in personal communication through the reflective image age.
Aids. Yeah. So obviously, you know, we'll get into the details of all that. We'll get to the separate sections. Just one primary thing to pull out of that. Okay. So they, up front, they're saying in some matters pertaining, you know, they talk about these kind of big picture issues, the master spirits act personally and directly. You know, and then in other things, no. Well, what's the, you know, why? What's the big issue that's in play there? You know, when they say that when it comes to rulings, regulations, adjustments, administrative decisions, the seven supreme executives are doing it. Well, those are details. Okay. Where are the master spirits resident? You know, where do they live and where do they stay? On paradise. They're the master spirits of paradise. Okay. That's where they're acting from. Okay. How transcendent is the Isle of Paradise of finite affairs? Absolutely transcendent, okay? When you're acting from paradise, you can't act on the minutiae. You're a big picture person by nature. You can't do anything else, okay? You can only engage the whole because you're completely transcendent of the details when you're standing on and acting from paradise, okay? So, obviously, that, you know, the master spirits, if they're going to be in charge of a, you know, if a particular master spirit is going to be in charge of a super universe, in charge of the whole super universe, and he can't act on any details, but there are details, obviously, like this cup and this person and this, you know, couch, and there's lots of details in the super universe here. There's going to have to be a whole bunch of other beings to handle details below the master spirits.
Okay.
Okay, so that's the first thing that you can notice, you know, that they're, you know, they're, that this is what, why, you know, the first reason why there's other beings in this list besides item number one? Why aren't there just seven master spirits? It's like, you know, before I was trying to make the Father do everything, and then I allowed there to be the eternal Son and the infinite Spirit, and I'll let them do a couple things too. You know, and then paper 16 challenged me, okay, I got to allow there to be seven more beings, so now I have 10. And then Christus told me I have to have the Paradise Trinity, you know, so that's 11. Okay. But just, you know, notice that all of those, okay, where does the Universal Father live? On Paradise. Where does the Eternal Son live? On Paradise. Where does the Conjoined Actor live? On Paradise. Where do the Master Spirits live? On Paradise. You know, the Paradise Trinity probably is pretty closely associated with the Paradise Isle. All of those things are very big picture transcendent facts. If the Father wants to get into details, or the Son, or the Spirit, or the Paradise Trinity, there has to be downstepped expressions of their desires, okay, made being.
If they came down themselves, there would be pandemonium.
The moment that they move, the universe ceases to exist, right? I mean, they have to stay on the Isle of Paradise, okay?
Yeah. Would you say that the Master Spirit then has a totality function for his area of domain as the Trinity does for everything?
Right. And see, that very fact that it's obvious that a Master Spirit has a totality attitude towards a whole super universe. Well, where does totality attitude come from? It doesn't come from the Father, the Son, or the Spirit. It comes from the Paradise Trinity. So the very fact that he has totality attitude must mean that there's some intimate association, at least in their origin, to the Paradise Trinity. Like I said, they're usually classified as children of the Paradise Trinity because they have such a totality attitude in their relationship to what they're supervising.
Who does he call Mom?
They're not micromanagers. Right? They're totality attitude facts. So that means they're very tied to the Paradise Trinity, even if you don't know the details. There must be a very close tie to the Paradise Trinity, because they told you up in the paper on the Paradise Trinity that that's where totality attitude comes from, the Paradise Trinity.
So the person of the seven supreme executives, then, so the master spirits make the seven supreme. I mean, they go down into.
Right. So the seven. We'll get into them, but just right. The executives are the ones that are down there in the trenches a little bit more, handling some details. Yeah. You know, they have a relationship to details. Obviously, they're still pretty high. I mean, they're on. They're in the central universe, okay? So they're going to have, downstepped agents as well. Yeah. But nevertheless, you can see it's just a process of downstepping, until you have things that can engage the really, really fine details.
Is it downstepping or delegating?
It's downstepping in many ways. And of course, in the act of downstepping your functioning means you're delegating that functioning. And you must delegate it because you are functioning at this level and something needs to happen down at this level. You can't. So you have to downstep. You have to delegate down to that level. You're confined above. You can't reach down. I mean, even an adjuster, when you talked about that, the adjuster can only reach down. When you look on the psychic circles in the sevenfold, the adjuster can only reach down to this fourth cosmic level, this supreme level. That's as far down as it can reach. If it's gonna have any association with something down further, like a seventh circler, for instance, okay, there's got to be something extending the reach. It's as far as it can reach down. And what does that? The Spirit of Truth does that right now for us, okay? Lots and lots of things are like this. They have distinct limits. It's like, well, I want an adjuster to be able to do anything that I want it to do. Well, that's not the way it works. An adjuster can only reach down to that level, and that's it. There's law. There's law in the universe. And that law is there's divine law. I'm sure you didn't pick that up, but they actually brought that in. in that that paragraph that starts out, the seven master spirits are the coordinating directors. Okay, you go down in that a little bit, you know, and did you notice how it used this kind of curious word of multifarious associates?
Yeah.
What does farious mean? Divine law. Okay, they have these associates, these downstepped expressions that conform to the laws of the cosmos. Like, I can't reach down there, so I have to have something that's down there that can reach down there. Okay, yeah, and it's many levels. Okay, that's or nefarious. You know, if you, you know, that means there's no, you know, divine law in play. Okay.
Means law.
Yeah. Yeah. Farious means law.
So if someone is nefarious,
what precision these guys?
They're no law. See.
They're lawless.
They're lawless. Yeah.
You couldn't put another word there.
Okay.
Say what they wanted to say.
They very purposely chose that word because if you're thinking philosophically, if you're, you know, and you're bringing in a precise understanding of the language, you go, oh. So that's the key thing there. They're just, a supreme executive can go visit the master spirits on paradise, but the master spirits can't go visit the supreme executives on the, you know, on the worlds of the infinite spirit. Yeah, they're on paradise, period. I mean, they can go from the periphery to the upper surface. They can do that.
Probably a huge trick.
Okay. Why are they really rooted on the periphery rather than the upper surface, even though they're persons?
Slowly circulating presences.
Of their cohorts. You know, what are those seven beings called that are sort of the other half of the equation? Seven supreme power directors. Right? Okay. Those seven supreme power directors have their anchors on the periphery, you know, and so that's really home base for the master spirits, right there with their anchor point. Okay. All right. Let's read some more.
The seven master spirits do not directly and personally contact universe administration below the courts of the Ancients of Days. Your local universe is administered as a part of our super universe by the master spirit of Orvantum. But his function in relation to the native beings of Nebadon is immediately discharged and personally directed by the creative mother spirit resident on Salrington, the headquarters of your local universe.
Now, and you remember, not only is a creative spirit a downstepped expression of the infinite spirit, but the master spirit of that super universe is very intimately involved in that downstepping and flavoring process for that creative spirit. Okay, so, yeah, see, there's a delegation via downstepping. All right, so let's get into this first group of beings, seven supreme executives here.
One, the seven supreme executives. The executive headquarters of the master spirits occupy the seven paradise satellites of the infinite spirit, which swing around the central aisle between the shining spheres of the eternal sun and the innermost Havana circuit. These executive spheres are under the direction of the supreme executives, a group of seven who were trinitized by the Father, Son, and Spirit in accordance with the specifications of the seven master spirits for beings of a type that could function as their universal representatives.
Before we deal with the meaning subject at hand, just so that we're not losing track of things that we've touched on in the past, when they said shining spheres of the eternal sun, why did they say shining?
Because they're really bright.
You know, the spiritual luminosity, remember? And we noticed that the worlds of the S-O-N are basically S-U-Ns in the central universe. You know, there's seven suns, not material suns like our sun, but they're the suns, S-U-N, for the central universe. Okay. All right, so notice what's going on here. So who brought these seven supreme executives into existence? And how did they bring them into existence? All three, but notice they didn't create them. The three together trinitized them. They're the seven trinitized supreme executives. They weren't created. They were trinitized into existence. Okay? And when we were reading about the worlds of the Father, and they're talking about the secrets of trinitization on, you know, some of those worlds, you know, they reminded us that trinitization is not just done directly by the Paradise Trinity. For instance, we could, you know, trinitize, creature trinitized Son. Well, how do we do that? Or how do the Father, Son, and Spirit, all three of them, do this? The same way that we do it, we must be doing it in some maybe unseen association with the Paradise Trinity, the source of trinitization. Now, so in other words, it's not the Father, Son, and Spirit as the first triunity, just standing there out there by themselves doing something. In between them and what gets done is the Paradise Trinity. Their act is going through the Paradise Trinity, okay? So that it's, if the Paradise Trinity wasn't an intermediary phenomenon, it wouldn't be trinitization, it would be creation. Okay? That's what's going on. Those three, and of course, when you're thinking about this, notice how they worded it. Did they say the universal Father, the eternal Son, and the infinite Spirit? They very purposely, or even the conjoint actor, they very purposely didn't. Because if I'm going to be, if my origination phenomenon here is somehow going to be in liaison with the Paradise Trinity, the Paradise Trinity is not a person. So there's not, I can't do it in a personal liaison. I'm going to have to do it as deity. The three flavors of deity, the Father, the Son, the Spirit. That's just their self, their deity. That deity can have a relationship with other deity, like the Paradise Trinity, in a non-personal way, so that all three facets of deity are in liaison with this fourth facet of deity, the Paradise Trinity, bringing these beings into existence. Now, they're persons, so they're going to have to get personalized by the Father, you know. But bringing the what gets personalized into existence, that's what we're talking about here. Not their personalization. That's always a second step. First, you're a self, and then personality engages you. First, there's some sort of form, some sort of self, and then it gets personalized. Sometimes that self, that form, is literal deity substance. And then when you personalize it, it's God. Other times, it's just really divine, very fancy stuff that we can't understand that gets personalized. Yeah. Yep.
Well, you can see that question mark. Well, if we think of Father, Son, and Spirit as deity, mm-hmm. but then the Paradise Trinity is not deity.
No, it is. See, again, deity's not... what? Remember... Right. Section 1 of the foreword is deity. Section 2 is God. God is personalized deity. Deity is a fact that's antecedent to God. It's more fundamental than God.
Let's go back and read that.
Yeah. You know, so one of the, you know, from when it's a religious text, like the Bible, the first sentence, you know, says, in the beginning, God. Okay, if this was a religious text, it would start out with, in the beginning, God did something or other. That's not how this book starts. It says, in the beginning, there was deity. Before there was God. And deity did something.
Or you think Christopher Hitchens could even get on with that.
Okay, this is, that in itself, even though you don't initially understand what the heck is the difference between God and deity, because I've always used those as synonyms you say to yourself, that's trying to tell you that it's not a religious text. It's something higher, something that goes deeper. It's a philosophic text. The concept of deity is a philosophic concept, not a religious concept. Okay? God is a religious concept. Because what is religion? That's personal spiritual experience. Okay? Deity is not necessarily personalized. It's more fundamental. It's a philosophic fact in terms of your ability to understand it. Okay? And then the science, as it were, is the threefold actuality. You know, that there's matter and there's mind and there's spirit energy, and that's the new science. Okay.
Is it correct to say that the Urantia book correlates or coordinates philosophy, religion, and science?
Not really. See, people have always said it that way because they haven't, because no one understands what the word philosophy is supposed to mean. Philosophy has, as a word, has gotten degraded down to be in a same plane as science and religions. And so people think of it as a triangle, a triad. You know, that there's science, philosophy, or science, religion, and philosophy. You know, so then you would say, well, this book is a coordination of science, philosophy, and religion. Not really. Because the truth of philosophy is you need to turn that triangle up. Science and religion are on one level, and there's a super additive consequence. Philosophy, true philosophy, contains all of religion and all of science, plus the super additive. It's not just the additive consequence. It's not just the sum of the two. There's something that you get that's beyond science and beyond religion, something that's above them that philosophy embraces.
What's that?
Well, that's what you need to figure out. What is that? What happens when you bring science and religion together? Okay? This book is a coordination of a twofold essential knowledge. The essential knowledge of science and the essential knowledge of religion. It coordinates those two. And once those two are coordinated, they can be brought into true association. You know, they actually will relate to one another when the two are coordinated. They're not relatable if they're not pre-coordinated to begin with. But having coordinated them as they do, they now can come together and resonate, you know, with each other, as it were. And there's a super additive consequence. Okay. And something beyond coordinated essential knowledge can flow through that super additive consequence. It's called truth. The revelation of truth. Remember, the book does two things. Coordinates essential knowledge, and having done that, it reveals truth. That truth only flows through your relationship to philosophy, not your relationship to science or religion. It flows from those, not through those. And philosophy, is in this associative block here. The mind will block where my consciousness is. If I'm going to know truth, if I'm going to be conscious of truth, I can't do it in my brain or some spirit energy that's, you know, in contact with me. Okay? It's in my mind. Your mind is meant for philosophy. Your spirit is meant for religion, and your matter is meant for science. Okay? Your unity is meant for religion. Your individuality is meant for science. But the super additive consequence is meant for philosophy and the truth that flows through it. That's what, you know, you can't live religion or science. Because what do you live? What do you obey? You obey truth.
That's philosophy.
And that's in philosophy. True philosophy is truth. It's the truth that stems from the two endpoints, the unity and the individuality.
It's the truth of the moment.
Okay. And so when a religionist just tries to zeal up his knowledge and declare it to be truth, that's delusion. Okay? Or when a scientist does the same thing, that's delusion. There is no truth in those endpoints. I mean, when someone says quid est veritas, what is truth, what are they admitting? They haven't discovered that super additive domain where truth is self-evident, and you wouldn't ask that question. they're down in one of the starting points still. You know, and they're looking at people that use the word, and they can tell it's just, oh, so facts are my facts and truth are your facts. I see which how you use the word. You know, you use it as a self-exaltation, as a delusional word. Okay? And yet, the word is, you know, if you can step back, for some curious reason, there's a word in the dictionary spelled T-R-U-T-H. And no one knows what it means. No one's ever known what it means. It's not just Pontius Pilate that didn't know. No one knows. Not a single person alive can put a proper definition in that dictionary of what the word truth means. You know, you'll look at it and say, well, it'll say fact. It's like, wait, no, the definition of truth is fact. They don't know what it means. Because it's sad to record that so few persons on your rancher. Okay? The only reason it's in there is because language comes down from above, and we have an initial encirclement in the cosmos where we have this vague, subtle notion in our heads that there's something that should be called T-R-U-T-H. And we know it's a grand thing, so we're always trying to take something mundane and, you know, see it as exalted or something. Well, this is sacred, so it must be true, or something like that. You know, we know it's a word that should somehow be above the norm, as it were, above the plane, but we've never been able to figure out what to point to, literally.
It's reserved.
Okay? It's not individuality. It's not unity. It's the association between the true. You know,
by the time we get to Salvington, we still probably won't really know truth, will we? I mean, there will be more beyond that.
There's always more, right? There's always greater truth.
We can start
here. But yes, you can, and you can start right here to begin to know truth.
Most people don't even start here.
Because you've given an initial encirclement in the Holy Spirit by grace. And the Holy Spirit is that, it's just that, it's a holy, you know, the H-O-L-Y is a shortened version of W-H-O, okay? You know, it's about that W-H-O-L-E, okay? The actual Holy Spirit has a threefold actuality in it, okay? You know, and you get that triunity together. If you actually engage the whole of the Holy Spirit, not just a third of it, okay? If you engage the whole Holy Spirit, that triunity, something will flow through that. Truth. Okay? And the only way you can engage the triunity is with personality. Yourself can, you know, get a bead on part of it. Like yourself could really fixate on morality, for instance. Yeah? Or it could fixate on science, or it could fixate on religion. But only your personality can bring the three together, science, morality, and religion. And have this, the fullness of what the word philosophy is meant to imply. You know, philosophy is only accessible by a person, you know, a whole person, not just the pre-personal sort of stuff. Pre-personal phenomena can have a science, and they can have a religion, and they can have morality and moralism, and okay. But genuine philosophy is something much more than humans really have ever basically appreciated. The first people to start really getting a sense that there was something profound, something holistic that you could strive for, you know, those ancient Greeks, you know? The word philosophy is a Greek word. Okay?
Philosopher king of Plato.
Right. Okay, you know? And so, you know, there's seeds of the true fact of philosophy back in its origins. You know, you're not going to find it by going to the philosophy department at some university and, you know, reading plaques on the wall and trying to figure out what the definition of philosophy is from what they're doing. Those people don't know what philosophy is, you know? Yeah. You know, and like I've tried to point out, I mean, I have a PhD, a doctor of philosophy. Okay, You know, and the people that gave it to me really don't know what the word philosophy means. Okay. And I didn't know what it meant when I got it. How could I know? Because the people who don't know were teaching me. Okay. I had to discover philosophy through a revelation, through a philosophic revelation. You know, this allows me to, I knew what religion was. I knew what science was. But only now, through revelation, do I know what philosophy is. It's the kind of thoughts you have when you wrap your mind around this thing, this revelation. Only a philosophic personal mind can grok this. A scientist or a religionist can't figure this out. Because civilization is a philosophic fact.
What? You know, what
it starts with individuals. It starts with God-conscious citizens. And, you know, like they said here, it's the purpose of civilization to express the triunity. It's fundamentally personal. You know, civilization is a choice. It's a personal thing. If all we are is just selves making decisions, you know, and even if we call them choices and they actually aren't, there can't be civilization. Everything that we do, if it's just decisions, has no triunity character. It won't be upheld by the upholder of triunity, the mother. It will fall. Okay? Like you're saying, it's very important to discover there's something that you never knew you would ever want to be interested in, something called philosophy, something that's even cooler than religion, something that has everything that religion has and more, and everything that science has and more, and something that neither of them have. True philosophy has something that religion can't have in and of itself, no matter how fun and cool your experiences with religion might be up to this point, to know that there's something even beyond that. Okay? And it goes all the way up to the masters of philosophy on the Isle of Paradise. Something very transcendent. You know, they tell you that, I'm telling you, okay, this is a philosophic text. So, well, how can I engage it? Well, you're going to need two things. You're going to need personality, genuine personality, and you're going to need some help. Now, what did they tell you? They told you, we're about to write a book that is going to be worthless to you unless you get some help from your adjuster and the Spirit of Truth and the Holy Spirit. Okay? And how do you have access to that help? Only as a person. No matter how cool your adjutant mindal self is, no matter how smart it is, how broad it is, you know, that doesn't have any relationship to those three helpers. Okay? Fancy selves don't have a relationship with the Holy Spirit, the Spirit of Truth, and the Thought Adjuster. Only persons do. Only a phenomenon that knows what a triunity feels like. Not just something that knows what unity feels like or individuality. You have to know what the triunity feels like in order, you know, that's why they say, yeah, you've been given the Spirit of Truth, but it's basically, you know, just sitting there waiting for something that it can actually engage besides that little thread that you were given by grace. You know, you're given a little thread of triunity by grace so that personality could identify.
It's gone by 20.
Well, I mean, it's in jeopardy of beginning to evaporate, you know, post-20. You know, you need to keep the, you know, you need to choose to perpetuate what was initiated in you. Because it doesn't go on forever.
But you continue to choose following truth, beauty, and goodness.
Yeah. But see, if those three words are spirit words to you, then you only know unity. Beauty is an individuality word, not a spirit word. It's up here. It's a science word. Okay. Okay. So, that's the challenge. Remember how we were just reading in the previous paper? I told you if you're gonna call yourself personal, and you don't have a science, a morality, and a religion, you're delusional in that labeling. You have to have a science. You have to actually know beauty, not just say, well, the way I feel spirit, the way I feel unity, I declare that to be beauty. Well, yes, but, okay, you need it more directly. You need to have engaged individuality more literally than that. Like I've said, you don't have to get to the point where you can see the beauty of the equations of general relativity. Okay, it doesn't have to be like that. You don't have to get all analytic. But again, another thing that's tied with this with beauty and individuality, of course, is art. Genuine art has to know individuality intimately. It can't just feel unity and try to put it on a canvas. That's not, that's too fuzzy. If the art is just kind of there's this kind of blur of color. See, it's not really art.
Called a blur of color.
Right. True art has definitive individuality that's arranged in such a way that it inspires your thoughts upward. Remember, true art is Marantia. Okay. Anyway, I don't want to go on and on.
If you don't follow the truth, beauty, and goodness, and I don't care, I mean, I know it, I have my truth, I know what beauty is, I know what goodness is, and that's the closest thing that they have given us to be able to follow in order to be upheld by the mothers.
Just remember that that's the truth, beauty, and goodness is there for the child of God. Okay? When you're reading in the beginning of the foreword, the first time they mention the threefold actuality, is it truth, beauty, and goodness?
Things, meanings,
and values. See, because, like I was saying, initially how you understand truth and beauty and goodness is from a religious vantage point. And from a religious vantage point, when they say things, meanings, and values, you go to the next sentence. It doesn't do anything for you. But when you see truth, beauty, and goodness, you go, ooh, I feel that. Okay, that's your religious consciousness, really. Okay, and that's a valid on ramp, but remember, it's just an on ramp. And in the, like I'm pointing out, if it was just a religious text, it would only mention truth, beauty, and goodness, in hopes that that might spur a little something besides just a pure goodness thought that you might not always think of beauty and truth as synonyms for goodness. Yeah. You might try to figure out how they're slightly different. It's not just the beauty of goodness and the truth of goodness. But you see, your religious consciousness tends to interpret those three as that. There's goodness, and then there's the beauty of it and the truth of it. See, so it's really all just goodness. Have you ever thought about beauty that's not the beauty of goodness? That's a different thing. What's the beauty of truth? What's the truth of beauty? Trying to think initially aside from goodness. Set goodness aside for a second. Okay. Set your spiritual vantage point aside for a second. Can you look at it from a scientific perspective? What does beauty look like from a scientific perspective?
Value.
Anyway, that's just all right. Let's read some more here.
Don't burst my bubble. I'm still a child of God.
No, you are.
But I
didn't burst your bubble. I validated your thought, And then I challenged you to notice that, you know, that there's a whole bunch more in this book besides truth, beauty, and goodness. That's the challenge. You can read lots and lots of pages and never see those three words. Okay? There's been longtime readers that skip all the pages that don't say truth, beauty, and goodness. They only read the pages that say truth, beauty, and goodness. They're skipping a lot of pages. Okay, why did the revelators put the other pages in the book? Okay, that's the
whole picture.
You know, like we're about to we're gonna read about seven supreme executives, and it won't say truth, beauty, and goodness. All right. Go ahead.
The master spirits maintain contact with the various divisions of the super universe governments through these supreme executives. It is they who very largely determine the basic constitutive trends of the seven super universes. They are uniformly and divinely perfect, but they also possess diversity of personality. They have no presiding head. Each time they meet together, they choose one of their number to preside over that joint council. Periodically, they journey to paradise to sit in council with the seven master spirits.
Okay. Two things. Like we pointed out in that first paragraph, they were already challenging us to try to understand exactly how you're supposed to think about these beings, because they didn't say that. They said they were trinitized instead of created. And you aren't quite sure what the word trinitized means. And one of the things that's in play here, when you start talking about trinitizing and stuff, it's like, well, should I call the seven supreme executives God? Should I call them personalized deity? Are they, it's like, well, I mean, if you're going to call them that, they need to be very definitively in some way functioning as a creator. Okay. And, you know, well, the very fact that they were trinitized into existence probably means that they don't do that. And yet they're going to do a lot of godlike things. You actually, in some of these beings, the words are kind of starting to break down. It's a little bit vague as to exactly, you know, how you should talk about some, you know, once we get past God, the ones that are in God the sevenfold, like Ancients of Days or God, you know, and this sort of thing. It's like, well, how about Eternals of Days? And how about the Trinitized Secrets of Supremacy? And, you know, and how about the seven supreme executives? And how about the circuit spirits? And how about, you know, and on and on and on it goes, you know, and it gets a little bit hard to even know how to use that word. You know, they're very divine and they interact very definitively with God, gods. But it actually, the word is starting to get a little bit hard to apply in some of these areas. It's not as, because you kind of have this simple dichotomy sort of that you set up where there's deity and then there's personalized deity. It's like, it's actually a little bit more complicated than that when you bring in the Paradise Trinity and this Trinitization thing. So in many ways, it's like, well, let me just not try to label them as God or not God. Let me just try to recognize that they're very profound beings. They do things that I often think of God doing, like bringing a particular flavor of angel into existence. The infinite spirit and the supreme executives work together in liaison to bring Omniafim into existence, for instance. But you're not quite sure if you should really think of them as God, you know. So let's just call them executives. The other thing that you have in play there is right in the middle there. They are uniformly and divinely perfect. We haven't gotten to the Ancients of Days yet, but we've mentioned this a number of times. They say, you know, essentially that same thing about the Ancients of Days. You know, that unlike the master spirits that are distinct as selves, like we've talked about in the previous paper, you know, separate from their personality difference, you know, differences, just as selves, the seven are, master spirits are different. But we said the ancients of days, the 21 ancients of days, their selves are identical. That's a uniform. The supreme executives are the same way. They're all of one flavor that's then uniquely personalized, but what's being personalized is all the same flavor. So that makes you suspicious. You suppose there's some close association between the ancients of days and the seven supreme executives. And your suspicion, would be valid. There is. And you see that as you go forward in the book. And they talk about a local universe. And they talk about the ancients of days having really close connections with the constellation level, but the seven supreme executives having really close association with the headquarters level and the local system level. So between the two of them, they've got all three levels in hand. There is a very, in some way that you don't initially recognize, it has to do with that complex relationship between the Paradise Trinity and the Infinite Spirit. There's a reciprocalness kind of between them. They're both this uniform thing kind of expressed in two different ways. And the one side is definitely God, the ancients of days. See, so maybe this other side, I shouldn't really think so much as God, but very closely associated with God, obviously. Not just the master spirits, but the ancients of days. Okay, so that's... and we'll when we get to the ancients of days section, we'll notice how they say that again, that uniformly and divinely perfect line there. Okay, so that should maybe give you a little something to hang your hat on. So in some way, they're kind of like the ancients of days on the inside of the central universe, rather than on the outside of the central universe. There's this thing. In some way, they're coordinated like this as a pair. Okay.
The seven supreme executives function as the administrative coordinators of the grand universe. They might be termed the board of managing directors of the post-Havona creation. They are not concerned with the internal affairs of paradise, and they direct their limited spheres of Havona activity through the seven spirits of the circuits. Otherwise, there are few limits to the scope of their supervision. They engage in the direction of things physical, intellectual, and spiritual. They see all, hear all, feel all, and even know all that transpires in the seven super universes and in Havona.
It's like, okay, wow. Normally when I've said that some being sees all, hears all, feels all, knows all, I tend to call that being God. See? That's what I was trying to point out. I mean, to allow these beings to be very profound and godlike, but maybe not really something you sort of immediately would try to understand as God.
But they're not limited to the super universe of their focus. I mean,
and you know that right off the bat because they're uniform. See? So their nature transcends the difference of the seven.
Same with the ancients.
Same with the ancients of days. Both the supreme executives and the ancients of days have a measure of transcendence of the master spirits, who are very narrowly focused. Even though they're on paradise and all the transcendence of that, see how this, a lot of times, you decide, well, actually, who's on top and who, the answer is neither. I mean, there's all these reciprocal phenomena that are really, they're both on top and they're both on the bottom. I mean, it depends on how you look at it.
So basically the concept that's trying to be conveyed here, maybe you would like to convey, is that it's that concept of the mother versus the father that, the mother... takes care of all those gaps, those holes, The father has these, and then the mother just kind of, it's taken care of. You know, so it's both sides of the Ancients of Days are filled in, you know. There's no gaps in administration.
And all this totality attitude stuff, see. Yeah. And if you try...
How can God let you fall?
If you try to just understand the universe from a father starting point, you know, or even the seven absolutes of infinity, you know, sort of the expansion of the father viewpoint, you'll end up trying to understand everything in a very kind of linear fashion, not in a holistic fashion. And that's what you're trying to bring in when you're bringing in this new thing called the Paradise Trinity and all the stuff that stems from that fact. All this totality attitude stuff, like the mother type deity, you know, and personalizations of that type of deity, like creative mother spirits, and you know, it's that totality attitude that has been very lacking in previous human thought. In this level of specificity, whenever humans in the past, like say Eastern religionists, you know, have reflected on totality attitude, it gets very fuzzy, and okay, it doesn't have precision. Okay, this is incredibly complicated and precise and detailed, and yet, you know, it is bringing in this totality attitude thing. Yeah, that's the deal, and you know, maybe just stress that again. That's the difference is what I mean when I say the father is the individuality of the parts. The mother is the individuality of the whole. That's the big difference. You know, and I can draw lines between two parts. But a whole is a whole. It's not even a sum of a bunch of lines. You know, I could tell you a system is not just the sum of all the relationships, all the lines between two points. Okay? It's more than that.
Not the sum of the three persons either.
Right. And the Paradise Trinity has something that the three persons, none of the three persons have. The Paradise Trinity has something the Father doesn't have, something above the Father. Yeah, so I'm saying, you know, when you look at it from the top down, the Paradise Trinity is here, and down are the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. They're downstepped expressions. You know, there's all this deity, and you can divide out three parts, and what's left is the undivided deity up above, the Paradise Trinity, okay, from the top down viewpoint. Okay, but you can understand that from the individuality viewpoint, the bottom up. If you just remind yourself that from the bottom up viewpoint, the Paradise Trinity is the super additive consequence, not the additive consequence. Okay? It's the super additive. It's above. That's what the prefix super means, above. Yeah.
They use that again, don't they, when about people working together, you know, yeah, that it's more than the total, yeah, that there's a super additive,
yep, just a simple sum.
Yep, right. And fundamentally, the reason that we could have the potential to do that is because personality allows for that super additivity, because personality allows for you to be part of this cosmic system connected through the individuality of the whole, in touch with that totality attitude. You're not just an island universe part like the Father made you, absolutely separate from everything. You know, if you were just that personality that the Father gave you, you would be absolutely individuated. You wouldn't know of anything else in the universe except the Father. You wouldn't know about tables, stars, Chris, Pam. You'd have no connection to anything except the Father.
That would be so sad.
It would be a vast black void with a bright white dot in it called the Father. Okay, let's keep going here.
These supreme executives do not originate policies, nor do they modify universe procedures. They are concerned with the execution of the plans of divinity promulgated by the seven master spirits. Neither do they interfere with the rule of the Ancients of Days and the super universes, nor with the sovereignty of the Creator's sons in the local universes. They are the coordinating executives whose function it is to carry out the combined policies of all duly constituted rulers in the grand universe. Each of the executives and the facilities of his sphere are devoted to the efficient administration of a single super universe. Supreme Executive Number One, functioning on Executive Sphere Number One, is wholly occupied with the affairs of Super Universe Number One, and so on to Supreme Executive Number Seven, working from the Seventh Paradise Satellite of the Spirit and devoting his energies to the management of the Seventh Super Universe. The name of this seventh sphere is Orvantam. The Paradise Satellites of the Spirit have the same names as their related super universes. In fact, the super universes were named after them.
Right, and that's something that, you know, even a lot of longtime readers have forgotten that sentence there. Right. See, it's actual spheres that have these names, like Orvantam. The very fact that the name ends in T-O-N, it's like a lot of our towns. You know, that's the word town, okay? T-O-N is the word town. And we spell it T-O-W-N now, but it's that word. It's town, okay? And we'll see as we go forward here just a little bit. They're hometowns in a certain sense. That's why they're named like that. Those seven spheres are a certain type of hometown. So they're given a town name, so a name that ends in T-O-N. Okay? So you have the seven hometowns, and then the seven super universes are just named after them. It's the super universe of that hometown, is what you're basically
What's
saying.
What's Orvon mean?
It's the outdwelling town. So the outdwelling part is in reference to it's, you know, it's what's outside of your initial domain, the local universe. It's that outdwelling domain. So as a super universe, you know, you have the Orvon part that's kind of speaking to that. As the world, you have the T-O-N part. See, so it's, they combine the two. It actually is referring to both in the way they constructed the name. Orvantam.
On the executive sphere of the seventh super universe, the staff engaged in keeping straight the affairs of Orvantam runs into numbers beyond human comprehension and embraces practically every order of celestial intelligence. All super universe services of personality dispatch, except inspired Trinity spirits and thought adjusters, pass through one of these seven executive worlds on their universe journeys to and from paradise. And here are maintained the central registries for all personalities created by the third source and center who function in the super universes. The system of material, moral, and spiritual records on one of these executive worlds of the spirit amazes even a being of my order.
Two little things there. They mentioned that thought adjusters, they head out from Divinington, don't go through one of these executive worlds. Do they go directly from Divinington to, say, Urantia?
No.
What do they go through?
Superuniverse.
Right, they go through Uversa, right. Mm-hmm. So they don't pass by the seven supreme executives. They pass by those ones that are closely associated, the Ancients of Days. See how there's this? Okay. And then that last thing, you know, this is one of those where, you know, it really starts to sink in. Oh my goodness, spirit's a substance. you know, the system of material, moral, and spiritual records. So in the same way I have a material record on a piece of paper, I've got some sort of spirit substance that I'm writing a record on in. Hard to know what word to use, you know, but, you know, and of course, mind is not a substance, so you can't, you know, but that what mind would be like if you made it a substance, that artificial substance, morantia substance, you know, so you have an individuality substance record, an associativity substance record, and a unity substance record. Okay, it's in triplicate. Okay. You know, and so there's a library with spirit books, tablets, whatever you want to call them, on shelves, quote unquote. You know, you can pull one of these things off and read that record. It's a literal thing, and you could drop it on your toe. Okay? Spirit is a substance.
So your record, if you only had one of the three or two of the three, would be incomplete.
Yeah.
That's...
See, because a full personal record is recorded as a triunity fact. It has to have all three, or it's not a whole record. Yeah. See, again, that's what they're trying to get at. It's like, wow, I'm not even sure how to think about how three different ways I could record something. Right, because we barely have any notion what personality is yet. I'm just trying to remind us. Yeah.
What do you mean when it says, all in the middle of that sixth paragraph,
mm-hmm.
all super universe services of personality dispatch?
Right, they're just... You know, you've got someone's being sent on a mission from point A to point B. They're being dispatched by some person on some mission, like a personal, the personalized adjusters that run to Vinnington. You know, dispatch a non-personalized adjuster, a regular thought adjuster, you know, to your rancher. Okay, that they don't have to check in on the worlds of the infinite spirit. That adjuster only checks in on the headquarters world of the super universe. So that's, yeah, that's what they mean. I mean, an adjuster doesn't dispatch itself. Some person is making a choice to dispatch that adjuster. So that's what they mean, personality dispatch. Yeah, see that, they can make decisions, but, you know, they can't make that choice. So that's, see, that's telling you something again, that about what's the difference between a decision and a choice. Because it's not, you know, that, think about an adjuster. Initially, an adjuster, prior to fusion, isn't directly related to time or space. And yet it's being put into relationship with, you know, this point in time and space. But, you know, it's that whole difference between a decision and a choice. I mean, if I make a choice, that's really independent of time and space. Like, you know, like I always mentioned, the simplest one from the Bible, choose this day whom you will serve. Okay? You know, is that time or space specific? No, you're just going to serve the Lord. It doesn't matter if you're in Boston or Boulder, you know, or Uzbekistan. It doesn't matter if it's this century or next century or, you know, I mean, it's not a function of space and time. But a decision, you know, is zeroing in on some point in space and time. You know, so you translate a choice into a decision. You downstep a choice into a decision and bring it into an engagement. So, you know, it's a mindful decision. Mind connects the spirit to the matter, the specific individuality that it's, you know, you're making a decision about. It's a mindful decision. But it's a spiritual choice. It's up there not yet focused to a fact. All right. I guess that's everything. Yeah, let's go to the next thing here.
The immediate subordinates of the supreme executives consist for the greater part of the trinitized sons of Paradise Savona personalities and of the trinitized offspring of the glorified mortal graduates from the age-long training of the ascended scheme of time and space. These trinitized sons are designated for service with the supreme executives by the chief of the Supreme Council of the Paradise Corps of the Finality.
Okay, so notice it's just those two types of creature trinitized sons, where it's two finaliters or it's two Paradise of Owners. Okay, not a Paradise of Owner with a finaliter. That's a separate issue. Yeah. But if it's one of those two types of creature trinitized sons, when they come into existence, the first thing they do is they go into service with these supreme executives. And if you remember anything about creature trinitized sons, down the road a ways, after they've worked with the Supreme Executive's foil, they go to work for someone else. Can you guess who it is? The Ancients of Days. The ones that are really closely associated. See, again, how this works? Okay. I mean, there's just all kinds of things in the book that if you think about it, wow, there must be some close connection between the Supreme Executives and the Ancients of Days. Okay. Just over and over, they're pointing out these little, the closeness of this connection. Let's see. I knew there was something else I wanted to say in there. That last part. Who is the chief of the Supreme Council of the Paradise Corps of the Finality? Yep, Grand Fanda. Yeah, so that's referring to there. Remember, there's, or maybe if you don't, you have seven different corps of the finality, and there's a chief of each, and those seven chiefs make this Supreme Council, and the chief of that Supreme Council is the chief of the mortal corps, Grand Fanda. Yep. So, that's, you notice I'm trying to do that. I mean, get to the point where you're not just in this paragraph. You're in the whole book when you're reading this paragraph, and you know what they're referring to there, even though we haven't gotten to that yet. Interpret what they're telling you, so that it comes alive for you, so that it means something. It isn't just a string of words.
Each supreme executive has two advisory cabinets. The children of the infinite spirit on the headquarters of each super universe choose representatives from their ranks to serve for one millennium in the primary advisory cabinet of their supreme executive. In all matters affecting the ascending mortals of time, there is a secondary cabinet consisting of mortals of paradise attainment and of the trinitized sons of glorified mortals. This body is chosen by the perfective and ascending beings who transiently dwell on the seven super universe headquarters. All other chiefs of affairs are appointed by the supreme executives.
Let's do that last part for it's kind of interesting. Did you see what the interesting thing that's going on there? Who's picking this second cabinet? Is it finaliters and creature trinitized sons, amongst themselves? No. It's ascenders who haven't even made it to Avoni yet. We're still ascending. They're back on a super universe headquarters. Isn't that an interesting thing? Now, remember how many profound things they mentioned that you can start to do when you make it to the super universe headquarters? Here's an example of it. It's like, wow. So I'm telling finaliters, like, you're going to be, my goodness, that's an amazing thing to be doing when you haven't even made it to Avoni yet. So, you've obviously gotten up there a ways by the time you get to the super universe headquarters. And it's not very bottom up at that point, obviously. It's pretty high up, bottom up. Okay, the other thing is just a technical thing so that you appreciate the scope. One millennium here they're talking about. Okay, whose millennium is that? And this is central universe stuff. Okay, so how does that work? The Paradise of Avoni Day, is the time it takes for the inner circuit of Avoni to go around once, is roughly how long in Earth time?
1,000 years.
1,000 years. Okay, so their day is 1,000 years. And the way this always works at all the different levels, you make a year out of 100 days. Okay, so their year is 100,000 years for us. And then a millennium is 1,000 of those years. So how long is that in Earth's years? What was that? No. Yeah, I mean, I had 100,000s, and then I took 1,000 of those. So that's 100 million. It's 100 million years. Is this so? They're serving for 100 million years.
But
Okay, that's their little stint. Okay. You know, and I'm saying that like purposely, because don't think like, it's like, oh my gosh, I mean, that long they can't do anything else? No, you need to get a bigger perspective, you know? You're way in the domain of billions of years of experience and stuff here, okay? I mean, there was a billion Havona worlds that it took, you know, you had to go through to become a finaliter. Okay, 100 million years is becoming, in relative terms, not that long a span of time.
Once you've done a trillion, a billion seems like
a time. So it's just, it's a short stint, you know, on one of these, you know, serving in one of these roles. And then you, what was that?
Is that the implication that a mortal would serve for that same length of time?
That's your life.
Right. I mean, of course, by mortals here, we mean, you know, mortals of paradise attainment. We mean finaliters. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, finaliters and creature trinitized sons, you know, are the two here. Yeah. So, you know, a being, you know, a finaliter is a being that's made it to the absolute of time, made it onto paradise. They have a direct identification with eternity. Okay. When you know eternity, what's 100 million years? Yeah. And no, I wanted to really stress that, because look at how the next sentence starts out. Okay. Yep.
From time to time, great conclaves take place on these paradise satellites of the spirit. Trinitized sons assigned to these worlds, together with the ascenders who have attained paradise, assemble with the spirit personalities of the third source and center in the reunions of the struggles and triumphs of the ascendant career. The supreme executives always preside over such fraternal gatherings.
A reunion? When I go to a reunion, I go to like a hometown, see? I see that. Those worlds are hometowns, and there's the direct use of that hometown fact right there. You know, you go to a reunion, and the hometown for those reunions are those worlds. So on one hand, you have Ascendington. Okay, that's one kind of a hometown that you're associated with. The seventh world of the spirit is another kind of hometown for you. You have these different TONs that are your hometowns in different ways. Okay? And of course, you know, we're using the conclave thing there, just like we experienced here recently in Rome.
You're fascinated with the Catholic Church a little bit, aren't you?
It's not. There's a lot of important things there that, you know, are part of the human construct.
Conclave could last a few million years. That would just be a normal little get-together.
And then there's a little puff of smoke, and it's over. But, you know, remember, it does mean, you know that it's a closed-door affair. See, that's why they're using that conclave word. Okay? Not everyone is invited to this reunion. Only those who, see, that's why they're using the word conclave. All right. All right. If you don't have the key, you don't get in.
Okay. The key is a commonality of experience.
Right. What's a hometown that you don't get invited to any reunions on? Divinington. All right. That's a hometown, Divinington. It's not your hometown, never will be. You'll never have the key to get in that door.
I hear they know how to party, but I'm never really going to find out.
There's conclaves there, but not yours.
Once in each paradise millennium, the seven supreme executives vacate their seats of authority and go to paradise, where they hold their millennial conclave of universal greeting and well-wishing to the intelligent hosts of creation. This eventful occasion takes place in the immediate presence of Magistan, the chief of all reflective spirit groups. and they are thus able to communicate simultaneously with all their associates in the grand universe through the unique functioning of universal reflectivity.
Okay, so we'll read about Magistan next week, but just the point there again. We started out with this same point. They go to paradise. Yeah, and the Magistan, all the details are not really, you know, immediately important. They go to paradise because they want to do what? They want to engage all seven simultaneously. So they need to get above the differentiation. You know, when you're on the seven worlds of the infinite spirit, you know, you're on only one, you know, you're in the differentiation. You're within the sevenfold individuation of spirit unity. You need to get above that individuation. You have to go up to paradise, and then, you know, you speak and it goes to all seven as if they were one. Okay. And that's, again, that's the fact that should remind you, this whole bit about thinking simplistically about those seven power nodes around the periphery for the seven supreme power directors. Okay, well, you know, it's not a simple radial spoke-like connection here. This is something very hard to even understand. Because your first thought is, it doesn't matter where you are in the periphery, anytime you reach out, you'd go everywhere simultaneously. You know, so how exactly is it somehow only going to one super universe and not all seven at the same time? Well, that probably has something to do with, where's this conclave? Is it on the periphery? No, it's on the top.
This
conclave here. Yeah, right. Yeah, but this one, see? So that's telling you something. See, that there must be, if you're on top, you can't individuate like that. But if you're on the side, there must be some way of selecting, see? And you're going from pure unity. On the bottom, you have the individuality. See, you're in, you know, you have some way to individuate some, but on the top, you don't. It's very unity-like. That's the personal spirit, you know, space, domain. And it gradually starts to come into more and more relationship with individuality. You go around under the periphery enough so that you can have these, this focusing. All right, so next time we'll get into, you know, this is a perfect spot to break. We'll get into Magistan and then the reflective Mother Spirits. And put your thinking caps on over the next week because it doesn't get any easier. We will, you know, as you saw, I didn't try to totally explain all these details, but I want you to at least know that there's something to be understood, you know, in some of these spots when they say some cryptic thing. You can penetrate that. A lot, like I've tried to point out, a lot of unpacking some of these cryptic comments stems from unpacking the central universe. That's the real key thing. Once you've sorted out what's connected to the pattern universe, a lot of these curious between the lines and whatnot statements, you know, start to manifest themselves.
If there's things that we didn't have time for you to elaborate on, maybe we should do that next time, because otherwise it'll be like 8 years before we get back to this spot.
No. The elaboration is at some point in the not too distant future, as part of Perfecting Horizons Institute, you know, there will be an advanced level course in the pattern universe that if you feel you're ready for, you can take. You know, it's what happens post mastering to some degree total deity. You know, if you can't sort out the total deity stuff, it's not going to help to start getting into the pattern universe and using total deity. So, you know, that's an advanced level course, and it will certainly be part of the the curriculum that, you know, that you could potentially sign up for in the Institute. You know, that paper is all written, it's all ready to be taught, you know, and including a handout about this relationship between the infinite spirit and the paradise trinity and how all these beings are associated with each other in this system and stuff. So, okay, that stuff is, yeah. It's just, you know, it's way too technical to do here. But
get a conclave under your belt.
Check in with the pattern. All right. All right, let's take a moment here.